This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Eldest Curses 2, The Lost Book of the White by Cassandra Clare and Wesley Chu. Read by B.D. Wong.
And the angels, which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness unto the judgment of the great day. Jude 1:6. Prologue. Idris, 2007. It was not quite dawn when Magnus Bane rode into the low clearing with death on his mind. He rarely came to Idris these days. That many shadow hunters close together made him nervous, but he had to admit that the angel had picked a pretty spot for the Nephilim's home. The air was alpine and fresh, cold and clean. Pines shuffled affably against one another on the banks of the valley. Idris could be intense at times, gloomy and gothic and full of foreboding, but this pocket of it felt like something from a German fairy tale. Perhaps that was why, despite all the shadow hunters everywhere, his friend Ragnar Fell had built his house here. Ragnar was not a cheerful person, but he had unaccountably built a cheerful house. It was a squat stone cottage, sharply gabled in rye straw thatch. Magnus knew perfectly well that Ragnar had teleported the thatch directly from a tavern in North Yorkshire, to the consternation of its guests. As he trotted his horse down to the valley floor, he felt the troubles of the present fade. At the top of the valley, everything was terrible. Valentine Morgenstern was working very hard to start the war he wanted, and Magnus was so much more wrapped up in it than he would have wished. There was this boy, though, with these very hard-to-describe blue eyes. For a moment, though, it would just be Magnus and Ragnar again, as it had been so many times before. Then he would have to deal with the world and its problems, which would be arriving shortly in the form of Clary Fairchild. He left the horse behind the house and tried the front door, which was unlocked and swung open at his light touch. Magnus had presumed he'd find his friend engaged in drinking a cup of tea or reading a voluminous tome, but instead, Ragnar was in the process of trashing his own living room. He was holding a wooden chair above his own head in some kind of frenzy. "Ragnar?" Magnus offered, and in response, Ragnar threw the chair against the stone wall, where it broke into splinters. "Bad time," Magnus called. Ragnar seemed to notice Magnus for the first time. He held up one finger, as though telling Magnus to wait a moment, and then with great purpose he strode to the oak bombay chest across the room and, one after the other, pulled each of its drawers out, allowing each to fall and smash against the ground in a huge clatter of metal and porcelain. He straightened up, rolled his shoulders, and turned to Magnus.
"You have crazy eyes, Ragnar," said Magnus carefully.
He was used to Ragnar being a relatively dapper gentleman, well-dressed, with a healthy glow to his green skin and a shine on the white horns that curved back from his forehead. The man before him would have seemed in bad shape no matter who he was, but for Ragnar, this was very, very bad. He looked lost, his glance flicking around the room as though trying to catch someone hiding just out of sight. Without preamble, he said, in a loud, clear voice,
"Do you know the expression, subspeci aeternitatis?"
Magnus was not sure what he'd expected Ragnar to say, but it had not been that.
Something like things as they really are, though that's not the literal translation, of course. Already, this conversation had gone completely off the rails.
Yes, said Ragnar. Yes, it means from the perspective of that which is really true, really and truly true. Not the illusions we see that we pretend are real, but things with all illusions stripped away.
Spinoza. After a moment, he added thoughtfully, that man could drink.
Very good at grinding lenses, though.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Magnus said. Ragnar's focus abruptly snapped, and he looked straight into Magnus's eyes, unblinking.
Do you know what existence is? Sub specie aeternitatis. Not our world, not even the worlds that we know, but the whole of everything.
I do. Do you now? Said Magnus. Ragnar didn't break his gaze.
It is demons, he said. It is evil. It is chaos all the way down, a bubbling cauldron of malevolent intent.
Magnus sighed. His friend had become depressed. It happened to warlocks sometimes. The absurdity of the universe became somehow both more and less funny as their lifespan stretched so far beyond any mundanes. This was a dangerous path for Ragnar.
Some things are nice, though, right?
He tried to think of Ragnar's favorite things.
The sunrise over Fujiyama? A good old bottle of Tokay. That place we used to have coffee in The Hague, it came in those tiny thimbles, and you could feel it burn its way to your stomach.
He thought harder.
How stupid an albatross looks when it lands on water.
Ragnar finally blinked, many times in a row, and then dropped into the plaid upholstered armchair behind him.
I'm not depressed, Magnus.
Sure, said Magnus. Total existential nihilism, that's regular old Ragnar.
It has caught up with me, Magnus. All of it. Now, the big guy's after me. The biggest guy. Well, the second biggest guy.
Still a pretty big guy, Magnus agreed. Is this about Valentine?
Because Valentine! Ragnar barked. Idiot shadow hunter business. I've no patience for it. But the timing is good for me to disappear. Anything bad happening in Idris right now is probably just part of this whole business with the mortal instruments. No reason for the agents of the real threat to question it.
Magnus was getting fed up. You want to tell me what this is about? Since you asked me to come here, said something about the matter's great urgency? Can we have a cup of tea, or have you already smashed the kettle?
Ragnar leaned in toward Magnus.
I'm faking my own death, Magnus.
He chuckled before turning and heading through a doorway toward Magnus' guest, more redecorating. With reluctance, Magnus followed.
For heaven's sake, why? He called after Ragnar's retreating back. I don't know why now, Ragnar called back. But a bunch of them are coming back. You can't kill them, you know. You can only send them away for a while. But then they come back. Oh, yes, do they come back.
Magnus was starting to wonder if Ragnar had finally lost it.
Who?
Ragnar suddenly appeared directly beside Magnus, emerging from what Magnus had thought was a closet, but was, he now realized, a hallway.
He says who?
Ragnar echoed sarcastically, and for a moment he sounded like his usual self.
Who are we talking about? Demons! Greater demons! What a name! Why did we let them name themselves? They're not so great.
Have you been drinking? Magnus said.
All my life, Ragnar said. Let me say a name to you. You tell me if it means anything.
Go.
Asmodeus.
Dear old dad, said Magnus.
Belphegor.
Blobby sort of chap, said Magnus. Where are we going with this? Is one of them after you?
Lilith.
Magnus sucked in air through his teeth. If Lilith was on Ragnar's trail, that was very bad.
Mother of demons, lover of Samael.
Right,
Ragnar's eyes flashed.
Not her. Him.
Samael? Magnus said, chuckling. No way.
Yes,
said Ragnar, with a sort of finality that made Magnus realize, with a sinking feeling, that Ragnar wasn't kidding.
Can I sit down or something? Magnus asked.
They took refuge in the wreckage of Ragnar's bedroom. He'd managed to split the whole bed frame in two, which was a pretty impressive trick. Magnus sat on a desktop that had miraculously remained intact. Ragnar paced back and forth.
Samael, as everyone knows, is dead, Magnus said. He did something that started letting demons into our world, and then he was killed, people say, by the Taxiarch.
You know Samael couldn't truly be killed, Ragnar snapped impatiently. Much lesser demons than him come back eventually. He was always going to, and now he has.
Fine, Magnus reasoned, but I don't see what it has to do with you. I mean, other than in the sense that it has to do with all of us. No, please don't throw any furniture until you've explained. Ragnar lowered his hands, and a floor lamp that had been spinning lazily toward the ceiling fell to the ground with a clatter.
He's been looking for me. I don't know why, but I can guess.
Wait, Magnus said, his brain starting to catch up. If Samael is back, why isn't he, you know, wreaking havoc?
He's not all the way back. He can't spend much time in our world, and he's still just floating out there in some kind of void. I think he wants me to find him a realm.
Magnus's eyebrows went up.
A realm?
Ragnar nodded.
A demon realm. One of the other dimensions in the cluster of soap bubbles that is our reality. He'll be very weak at the start. He'll need energy to build up his strength, build up his magic. If he can find a realm to claim for his own, he can make it into a kind of dynamo for his own power. And I, Ragnar Fell, am the world's leading expert on dimensional magic.
And it's most humble. Why can't he find his own realm?
Oh, he probably would eventually. He's probably been looking all this time, but demon time is not the same as human time, or even warlock time. It could be hundreds more years before he returns, or it could be tomorrow.
He trailed off. In the corner, a wastebasket slowly tipped over and spilled its contents across the uneven planks of the floor.
So you're going to fake your own death. Doesn't that seem hasty?
Do you understand, Ragnar roared, what it would mean for Samael to return to his full might? If he returned to Lilith and they joined their power together, it would be war, Magnus. War upon Earth. Total destruction. No more bottles of Tokay. No more albatrosses.
What about other seabirds?
Ragnar sighed and sat down next to Magnus.
I have to go into hiding. I have to make Samael think I'm gone, where nobody can ever reach me.
Ragnar Fell, the expert on dimensional magic, must disappear forever.
Magnus processed that for a moment. He stood and walked out of the bedroom to regard the devastation Ragnar had wreaked upon his living room. He liked this house. It had been a place that felt like a second home for more than 100 years. Ragnar had been his friend, his mentor, for many more years before that. He felt sad and angry. Without turning back, he said,
"How will I find you?"
"I'll find you," said Ragnar. "In whatever new persona I adopt, you'll know me."
"We could have a code word," said Magnus.
"The code word," Ragnar said, is that I will tell the story of the first night you, Magnus Bane, consumed the Eastern European plum brandy known as Slivovitz in the Czech tongue. I believe you sang a song that night of your own composition.
Maybe no code word, said Magnus. Maybe you can just wink or something.
Ragnar shrugged.
It should not take me long to reestablish myself. I wonder who I shall be. Anyway, if there is nothing more...
There is, Magnus said. He turned and found that Ragnar had gotten up from the desk and come to join him in the living room. Magnus said quietly, I need the Book of the White. Ragnar began to chuckle, and then broke into a heartier laugh. He slapped Magnus on the back.
Magnus Bane, he said, keeping me drowning in downworld intrigue to my fake last breath. Why could you possibly need the Book of the White now?
Magnus turned to face Ragnar. I need to wake up Jocelyn Fairchild. Ragnar laughed again.
Amazing. You not only need the Book of the White, you need to find it before Valentine Morgenstern. My friendship with you has always been a rich tapestry of terrible things happening, Magnus. I think I'll miss it.
He smiled.
It's in Wayland Manor, in the library, inside another book.
It's hidden in Valentine's old house?
Ragnar smiled even wider.
Jocelyn hid it there. Inside a cookbook. Simple Recipes for Housewives, I believe it's called. Remarkable woman. Terrible choice of husband. Anyway, I'm off.
He began to make for the door. Wait! Magnus followed and tripped over what turned out to be a statue of a monkey cast in brass.
Jocelyn's daughter is on her way to ask you about the book right now.
Ragnar's eyebrows went up.
Well, I can't help her. I'm dead. You'll have to pass on the information yourself.
He turned to go.
Wait, Magnus said again. How did you die?
Killed by Valentine's thugs, obviously, said Ragnar. That's why I'm doing this now.
Obviously, murmured Magnus.
They were looking for the Book of the White themselves. There was a scuffle. I was killed.
Ragnar looked impatient. Do I have to do everything for you here? He stomped past Magnus, pointed to the back wall with his left index finger, and began to write on it in fiery abyssal script.
I'll write it on the wall for you so you won't forget.
Really, abyssal?
I was killed by Valentine's goons. Because they...
He paused and glanced at Magnus.
You never kept up your abyssal, Magnus. This will be good practice for you.
He turned back to the wall and resumed writing.
Now I am dead. Oh, no. There, easy enough for you.
Wait,
Magnus said a third time, but he didn't actually have anything to ask. He grabbed at a random glass jar tipped over on top of the mantelpiece.
You're not taking your...
He peered at the label and cocked an eyebrow at Ragnar.
Horn polish?
My horns will have to go unpolished, Ragnar said. Get out of my way. I'm faking my own death now.
I didn't know you had to polish your horns.
You do, or at least you should. If you have horns, if you don't want them to look dirty and unkempt, I'm leaving, Magnus.
Finally, Magnus's composure broke. Do you have to? He said, sounding to his own ears like a petulant child.
This is insane, Ragnar.
You don't have to die to protect yourself. We can talk to the Spiral Labyrinth. You don't have to deal with this alone. You have friends, powerful friends, such as myself. Ragnar gazed at Magnus for a long moment. Eventually, he walked over and with great solemnity gave his friend a hug. Magnus reflected that this was perhaps their fifth or sixth hug in their hundreds of years of friendship. Ragnar was not much for physical touch.
"This is my problem, and I will deal with it myself," said Ragnar. "My dignity demands it."
"What I'm saying," said Magnus, "is that you don't have to." Ragnar stepped away and looked at him, sadly. "I do, though." He turned to go.
Magnus looked at the letters of fire on the wall, now fading to invisibility.
"I don't know why I'm making such a big deal of this," he said. "You just love a dramatic gesture. We'll see if this fake death thing lasts a week before you get bored and show up in my apartment with your crokinole set."
Ragnar chuckled and vanished without another word. Magnus stood there for a long time, staring at the empty space where Ragnar used to be. His former mentor had taken no luggage, not a change of clothes or a toothbrush. He had simply disappeared from the world. The front door hung open as Ragnar had left it. It looked better for the scenario he was trying to portray, but it gnawed at Magnus like a wound, and after a short while he closed it gently. In the ruins of Ragnar's kitchen, Magnus found an enormous clay tobacco pipe, and in the ruins of the bathroom, a jar of a rare dried leaf of Idrisian origin that had been popular for Shadowhunters to smoke back when Magnus himself was a child, hundreds of years ago. For Ragnar's sake, for old time's sake, he lit the pipe and puffed on it thoughtfully. From the window he watched the steady footfalls of Clary Fairchild's and Sebastian Verlach's horses as they descended into the clearing to meet him.
Part 1. New York.
Chapter 1. The Sleep Thorn. September 2010. It was late, and until a moment ago, all had been quiet. Magnus Bane, High Warlock of Brooklyn, sat in his living room on his favorite chair, open book face down in his lap, and watched the latch of his top story window jiggle. For the last week, somebody had been prodding and testing the magical wards protecting his apartment. Now it seemed they had decided to prod more directly. Magnus thought this a foolish decision on their part. Warlocks kept late hours, for one thing. For another, he lived with a shadow hunter, who was currently out on patrol, true, but Magnus was fully capable of defending himself, even in his pajamas. He cinched the belt of his black silk robe tighter and wiggled his fingers in front of him, feeling magic gather in them. He reflected that years ago he would have been much more casual about this kind of break-in, letting it play out naturally and trusting his instincts to lead him through. Now he sat pointing literal finger guns at the window. Now his infant son was asleep just down the hall. At just over a year old, Max was sleeping through the night most of the time now. This was a relief, but also an inconvenience because both of Max's parents kept nocturnal hours. Max, on the other hand, kept military hours, waking every morning at 5:30 with a cheerful shriek that Magnus both adored and dreaded. The window slid upward. Fire woke in both of Magnus's palms, and magic blazed in the dark sapphire blue. A figure pulled its torso through the window, and then froze. Framed in the opening was a shadow hunter, in full demon hunting gear, bow looped over one shoulder. He looked surprised. Hi, said Alec Lightwood. I'm home. Please don't shoot me with magical rays.
Magnus waved with both hands, blue lights paling, then winking out, leaving faint traces of smoke curling around his fingers.
You usually use the door.
Sometime I like a change of pace.
Alec pulled himself the rest of the way in and closed the window behind him. Magnus gave him a look.
Okay, truth, I demonate my keys.
We go through so many keys.
Magnus got up to embrace his boyfriend.
Wait, no, I smell.
There's nothing wrong, proclaimed Magnus, moving his head toward Alec's neck. With the smell of the sweat of a hard night's work. Oh, you do smell. What is that?
That, said Alec, is the musk of the common subway tunnel smoke demon.
Oh, honey.
Magnus kissed Alec's neck anyway. He breathed through his mouth.
Hang on, it's mostly on the gear, said Alec.
Magnus gave him a little space, and he began taking it off. The bow, the quiver, his steely, some serif blades, his leather jacket, his boots, his shirt.
Let me help you with the rest of that, Magnus murmured as Alec finished unbuttoning the shirt.
And Alec gave him a real smile, his blue eyes warm, and Magnus felt a wave of love thrum through him. 3 years in, he still felt as strongly as ever for Alec, more so every day. Still, he marveled at it. Alec's mouth quirked, and he shifted his gaze to the hallway past Magnus.
He's asleep, Magnus said, and kissed Alec's mouth.
Been asleep for hours.
He moved to pull Alec toward the couch. Only a quick wiggle of his fingers, and the candles on the end table lit and the lamps dimmed. Alec laughed, low in his chest.
We have a perfectly good bed, you know.
Bed's closer to the kids' room. Quieter to stay here, Magnus murmured. Also, we would have to kick Chairman Meow off the bed.
Aw,
said Alec, dipping his head to kiss the hollow of Magnus's throat. Magnus let his head fall back and allowed himself a little pleased moan.
He hates that.
Hang on, said Magnus, stepping back. With a flourish, he divested himself of the robe, letting it fall into a pool of black silk around his feet. Underneath, he wore navy pajamas covered in small white anchors. Alec's eyes narrowed.
Well, I didn't know this was happening, obviously, Magnus said. Or I would have worn something sexier than my fuzzy sailor pajamas.
They are plenty sexy, said Alec. And then both of them froze,
because a sudden scream rent the air.
Alec closed his eyes and exhaled slowly, and Magnus could tell he was mentally counting to 10.
I'll go, said Alec. I'll go, said Magnus. You just got home.
No, I'll go. I want to see him anyway.
Still only in his trousers, Alec padded toward the hall to Max's room. He looked over his shoulder at Magnus, shaking his head and smiling.
Never fails, huh?
Kid's got a sixth sense, Magnus agreed. Rain check.
Stay there.
Magnus opened a little portal to Max's room to watch Alec pick up their son and rock him. Alec looked over at the portal from his end and said,
Sure, that seems much easier than just walking down the hall.
I was told to stay here.
Alec pointed at the portal and said to Max,
Is that Babak? Do you see Babak?
Magnus had wanted to be called something that felt true to his own childhood, but it always felt strange. His own father, the human one, had been Babak, and when he said it to Max, he felt a little twinge as though he were walking on his father's grave. Max quickly calmed. These days a scream was more likely to be a nightmare than anything requiring more than soothing, and blinked sleepy eyes at Magnus, who smiled and wiggled little glittery sparks from the ends of his fingers at his child. A smile broke on Max's face as his eyes drifted shut.
He was already almost asleep again, one chubby blue arm flopping out to the side. Max's skin was deep blue. That was his warlock mark, along with adorable stubs that Magnus suspected would grow into horns. Alec returned him to his crib. Magnus watched, marveling at the strange happiness of his life now, as a beautiful, extremely fit man with no shirt and startlingly blue eyes cared for the baby they had together. He cursed his own sentimentality and tried to think sexy thoughts. Alec looked up at him, and in the dim light, Magnus could suddenly see how weary he looked. "I," Alec declared, "am going to go take a shower. Then I will return to you in the living room." "Then probably another shower," said Magnus. "Hurry back." He closed the portal and returned to his book, a study of Scandinavian mythological artifacts and their owners and locations through history. He planned to begin thinking sexy thoughts again when Alec got back. 2 minutes into Alec's shower, which, based on Alec's usual showers, was likely to last around 20 minutes, Max gave a sudden cry in his sleep. Magnus was immediately alert, and then, when no further sound came, relaxed again and returned to his reading. A few minutes later, he heard footsteps in the hallway. Magnus turned around fast. He wasn't crazy. Someone had been testing his wards and planning to break in. When he saw who appeared in the doorway, his heart sank. No matter what she was here for, nobody was going to be having any romantic times tonight. "Xin Yan Zhang," he said, affecting a blasé tone. "Are you here to try to kill me again?" Xin Yan Zheng's warlock mark was a supernaturally still face, her expression blank and secret, no matter what she was feeling. The last time Magnus had seen her, she had been tied to a marble pillar to restrain her plot to bring the Prince of Hell Asmodeus to power ruined. Magnus had sympathy for her. She had rage and pain inside her that he could understand all too well. And he had not been upset when she somehow escaped Alec's custody and they had not had to turn her over to the Clave. Now she stood before Magnus, impassive as ever.
"It took a great deal of time to break through your wards. They were very impressive."
"Not impressive enough," Magnus said. Xin Yan shrugged.
"I needed to talk to you."
"We have a telephone," Magnus said. "You could have just called. It's not a great time, actually."
"I have some very, very good news," Xin Yan said,
which was not what Magnus had been expecting.
"Also, I need the Book of the White.
You will give it to me." That was more what he had been expecting. Magnus considered whether to go into an explanation of why, despite his wishing Xin Yan all the best in her life. Nevertheless, he was wary of giving her one of the most powerful spell books in existence because of everything he knew about her and all the things she had done. Instead, he said, "I don't have it anymore. I gave it to the Spiral Labyrinth." "But what is this good news?" Before she could speak, a second figure stepped into the room from the hallway. Magnus gasped. Ragnar. Ragnar, who had disappeared 3 years ago, who had reassured Magnus he would be in touch soon. Magnus had waited and then taken up an active search, and in the end he had concluded that Ragnar had been caught after all. That his ruse had failed, that he was dead in truth. Ragnar, who he had mourned for and said goodbye to in his head, if not in his heart. Ragnar holding Max. Magnus was rendered speechless. Under normal circumstances,
He would have gone for his 7th ever hug with Ragnar, but these weren't normal circumstances. Xinyan was here, and there was something very odd about the way Ragnar was looking at Magnus. And the way he was holding Max. He held him indifferently, like a sack of flour. Max didn't seem to mind, actually. He was still mostly asleep and blinking very slowly.
"So," said Ragnar, more sharply than Magnus would have expected, "I see this happened. I always assumed you'd end up with one of these somehow, Magnus. But is it wise?"
"His name is Max," Magnus said. He was just going to take this one moment at a time. "Someone had to take him in, so we did. He's ours. How did you get in, anyway?" Ragnar chuckled, a familiar sound made eerie by its unexpected reappearance. "Magnus Bane, so great in power, so soft in heart. Always taking in the helpless and the needy. You've got a whole little shelter here between the Shadow Hunter and this little blueberry." Magnus was not sure that, given Ragnar's attitude, he had the right to call Max a blueberry.
"It's not like that," he said. He looked over at Xinyan, who watched the exchange with silent interest. "We're a family."
"Of course you are," said Ragnar. His eyes glittered.
"So," Magnus said, "are you still fake dead? Or is this officially your return to life? Also, how do you know Xinyan? Also, I think you should give me the baby."
Xinyan spoke up. "Ragnar and I are collaborating together on a project."
Alec was still in the shower. Magnus considered making a sudden loud noise, although he really wanted to get Max back from Ragnar before that. He decided to stall.
"I hope you won't mind," he said, "if I ask you about the nature of that project. Last time I saw you, Xinyan, my boyfriend was releasing you from imprisonment in the hope that you'd learned an important lesson about working with greater demons, princes of hell, and the like. Specifically, we hope that you'd learn not to work with them in the future."
The category of greater demons was broad. It included many types of intelligent fiends. Princes of Hell were far more powerful. They were former angels who had fallen when they fought on the side of Lucifer in the rebellion.
"Obviously," said Xinyan with a haughty air, "I no longer served a greater demon."
Magnus let out a slow breath of relief.
"I serve," said Xinyan, "the greatest demon."
There was a pause. "Capitalism?" hazarded Magnus. "You and Ragnar have started a small business and you're looking for investors."
"I serve the greatest of the 9 now," said Xinyan in a gloating, triumphant tone that Magnus remembered well and hadn't liked the first time around either. "The maker of the way, the eater of worlds, the reaper of souls."
"The wonder from down under," suggested Magnus. "And Ragnar, old buddy, where are you on world-eating?"
"I've come around to be in favor of it," Ragnar said.
"I should have mentioned earlier," said Xinyan. "Ragnar is entirely under the thrall of my master, and my master has given him the gift of the Sveventhorn."
From a scabbard at her side, she drew a long, ugly iron spike, barbed along its blade and ending in a sharp point that was wickedly twisted like a corkscrew. It looked like a very goth fireplace poker. Magnus's self-control snapped.
"Give me the baby, Ragnar," Magnus said.
He got up and made for his friend.
"It's very simple, Magnus,"
said Ragnar, shielding Max from Magnus's grasp.
"Samael,
ruler of greater demons, the greatest of the princes of hell, is inevitably guaranteed to finish the job he started 1,000 years ago, briefly interrupted by the nuisance of the Shadow Hunters, and rule this realm as he has ruled others. The inevitability of his victory, he went on conversationally, has, how should I put it, twisted my will with its nigh-infinite strength? Yes, that describes it quite well, I think.
So faking your own death was basically pointless, said Magnus.
Xin Yun found me, Ragnar admitted. She was very highly motivated.
Magnus had almost reached Ragnar, but Xin Yun closed the distance shockingly quickly and held Magnus at Sveffenthorn Point. Magnus stopped short and held up his hands in the classic pose of non-threatening surrender. His heart was pounding. It was hard to concentrate while Ragnar had his hands on Max.
You don't understand, Xin Yun said. We are not stealing the Book of the White from you. We are giving you something in exchange, something even more valuable.
And with a jolt, she jabbed the Sveffenthorn into Magnus's chest. It sank into his chest without any resistance from bone or muscle. Magnus felt no pain at all, nor any desire to move, even as the thorn pierced his heart. There was only a sort of terrible lassitude. He could sense his heart beating around the thorn. He didn't want to look down, didn't want to see it sticking out of his chest. Part of him couldn't believe Ragnar was here, watching this, watching and not doing anything about it. Xin Yun leaned forward and gave Magnus a kiss on the cheek. She twisted the thorn a half turn, like the dial on a safe, then withdrew it. It exited as painlessly as it had entered, leaving a trail of cold red flames emerging from his chest in its wake. Magnus touched the flames, which passed through his fingers harmlessly. The wound didn't hurt. The lassitude was beginning to clear.
What have you done? Magnus said.
As I said, Xin Yun said, I will give you a great gift. The first part of it, anyway. And in exchange, we'll be taking the Book of the White.
I told you, Magnus began.
Yes, but I knew you were lying, said Xin Yun, because I already have the book. I retrieved it from your child's bedroom before I made myself known to you, as one would if one were not stupid.
Don't take it to heart, Magnus, Ragnar said sympathetically. Samael's very will is bound up with the Book of the White, and his servants feel a constant pull towards its presence.
Magnus had not known that, in fact, and would probably have left the Book of the White somewhere safer than among a pile of his son's picture books, if he had.
I could do things to stop you leaving with the book, he said, and saw Ragnar's eyes narrow. And also, Alec is here. But you put me at a disadvantage. Ragnar, give me Max, and you can leave with the book.
We would leave with the book regardless, Xin Yun said.
But Ragnar, who had never had much of an appetite for a physical fight, nodded.
No funny business, he said to Magnus.
Of course not, said Magnus.
Ragnar came closer and handed the baby to Magnus, who carefully curled Max into the crook of his left arm. Then, in a sudden outburst of motion, he violently stabbed all 5 fingers of his right hand into Ragnar's chest in the general vicinity of his heart. Instantly, through the flow of magic within Ragnar's body and into Magnus's hand, he could sense the presence of Samael's control, a void, a place where the light of Ragnar's life essence fell away into blackness. With an effort, trying not to disturb Max, he attempted to draw it out from Ragnar.
That's funny business, Magnus, yelled Xin Yun.
She was pointing the Sveffenthorn at Ragnar, manipulating it in subtle movements. Ragnar made a guttural noise deep in his chest as he struggled against Magnus. Then he tensed, and with a sudden strength cast Magnus away. Magnus was thrown back, lost his footing, and managed to fall onto the sofa behind him, cradling Max. The landing was soft, all things considered, but the fall was certainly surprising enough for Max to wake and immediately burst into tears. All the adults in the room stopped short where they were. Very quietly, Ragnar said, "Don't feel bad, Magnus. The power granted to me by my fealty to Samael is more than you or any warlock could overcome."
"Ragnar!" Shinyan hissed. "Quiet! The baby!" she shrieked, and fell suddenly to the ground, the shaft of an arrow jutting from her calf.
It was so surprising that Max fell silent again.
"Stay where you are!"
Alec yelled from the end of the hallway. Ragnar turned to gaze down the hallway with an expression of genuine, curious surprise. Magnus ought to involve himself in the melee, he knew, but he was sprawled on his couch underneath his infant son. With some effort, he began the elaborate movements necessary to stand up and not drop Max. He considered, not for the first time, teleporting his child and rejected the idea as not safe. He didn't have time to get a portal open.
Maybe if he floated Max to the ceiling?
His thoughts were interrupted by the telltale sound and shimmer of Shinyan opening a portal of her own. Magnus had foolishly assumed she was out of the fight, and Ragnar was already making a beeline for the portal. There was no way Magnus could catch him in time. But then Magnus beheld a truly glorious sight. Like a Greek god, Alec stepped into view, his hair wildly out of sorts from the shower, still dripping with water. He had a white towel wrapped around his waist, a leather cord around his neck with a light wood ring hanging from it, a huge sure-strike rune on his chest, absolutely nothing else on, and an arrow fully nocked in the beautifully polished oak recurve bow that normally hung decoratively on the bedroom wall. It was like something from a Renaissance painting. Magnus knew that Alec often worried that he was too ordinary for Magnus, that compared to the wonders Magnus had seen in hundreds of years, he must seem comparatively mundane. Magnus did not think Alec understood what it was like to behold up close a shadow hunter in full warrior mode. It was a lot. Snapping back to the situation at hand, Magnus noted that Shinyan was already gone through the portal and Ragnar was now entering it. Magnus, meanwhile, had gotten to his feet and was holding Max in front of him. He needed his hands free to do magic, but he didn't want to let go of his child. An arrow flew. It missed Ragnar by a hair, but tore a scrap from the back of the warlock's cloak as the portal closed around him. There was a sudden silence. Alec turned to Magnus, who was holding and rocking Max. Max had gone quiet.
"Was that Ragnar fell?"
Alec looked stunned.
"With Shinyan Jung?"
Alec had never met Ragnar, but there were plenty of photos, sketches, and even one large oil painting of the warlock among Magnus's belongings. "That's exactly who it was," Magnus said into the silence. Alec crossed the room and crouched down to retrieve the arrow and the scrap of cloth it had pinned to the floor. When he looked up at Magnus, his expression was somber.
"But Ragnar Fell is dead."
"No," said Magnus. He shook his head, suddenly exhausted. "Ragnar lives."
Chapter 2 Between Air and Angels. While Magnus returned Max to bed, Alec went to put some clothes on. His whole body was still tensed, full of adrenaline and anxiety. He was unsure of what had just happened in his home or what it meant. Magnus had talked about Ragnar mostly as a figure from his past, his mentor, his teacher, his fellow traveler among the shadow hunters at various points. He remembered the stoic calm with which Magnus had reacted to Ragnar's death 3 years ago. At the time, he'd assumed it represented Magnus's great existential wisdom, born of a life lived through so many deaths. Now, he wasn't so sure. When he heard Magnus come into the bedroom behind him, he pulled a t-shirt on over his boxers and said,
"So you knew about Ragnar being alive?"
Sort of, said Magnus. Alec waited. I knew he was planning to fake his own death, but he had promised to be in touch, and he had been in deadly danger. That's why he had gone into hiding. When weeks passed, months, a year, 2 years, I assumed something had gone badly wrong. So first you thought he wasn't dead, said Alec. He turned to face Magnus, who looked oddly vulnerable and uncertain. He'd put the black robe back on. And then you thought he was dead? It was the obvious conclusion, said Magnus, and I was right in a way. He had been caught, just by Shenyun. He looked at Alec with intensity. He was holding Max, he said quietly. He came over and sat on the edge of the bed. I didn't... That's the first... He took a moment and then spoke again, the quaver gone from his voice. There is something quite marvelous about having a child, he said. In times of danger, it does focus the mind very well. Alec went over to Magnus and put his hands on his boyfriend's shoulders. It isn't just us anymore. I had to hold it together, said Magnus. I had to. I had no other option, so I did. Otherwise, I would be very shaken up right now. Alec gave him a wry smile. Because Ragnar Fell is alive? Because Xinyun Zheng is back in our lives? Because they're working together? Because they took the Book of the White? Actually, said Magnus mildly, shrugging off his pajama top and robe, because Xinyun stabbed me with a mythological stick, and I don't know what it's done. Alec looked. There was a fissure in Magnus's chest, from which flowered wisps of scarlet flame that dissipated as soon as they appeared. He wondered why Magnus was not more concerned. He himself was very, very concerned. Before speaking, he bent down and grabbed his trousers from the floor. It's called a Svefenthorn, apparently, said Magnus. The lightness of his tone set Alec's teeth on edge. What was wrong with Magnus? Was he in shock? Why are you putting on your pants? He asked. Alec held up the cell phone he'd just withdrawn from his pocket. I'm calling Katerina. Oh, don't bother her in the middle of the night, Magnus began. Alec held up a finger to silence him. A voice, still half buried in sleep, came over the phone. Alec? I'm so sorry to wake you up, Alec said in a rush. But it's Magnus. He's been stabbed by a big thorn, I guess. Something demonic, definitely. And now he's got a magical fissure in his chest and there's a light coming out of it. When she spoke again, Katerina sounded completely awake and alert. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Don't let him do anything. She hung up. She says don't do anything, Alec told him. Excellent news, said Magnus. He put his robe back on and lay down on the bed. That was already my plan. Alec grabbed the arrow from where it lay discarded on his nightstand and pulled the scrap of cloth from it. He'd missed Ragnar with the arrow on purpose. Even in his panic, his rage that his home had been invaded and Max and Magnus threatened, he had recognized the green-skinned warlock as one of Magnus's oldest friends. He couldn't hurt him. So he'd gone for a piece of his cloak instead. He closed his hand around it now. I'm going to try to track Ragnar. Magnus's eyes were half closed. Good idea. Great initiative. What do you think they want with the Book of the White? Alec said. He drew a quick tracking rune on the back of his hand with his steely. He felt the bit of cloak seem to come alive inside his fist, the strange tickle in the back of his mind that said the rune was working to locate Ragnar Fell. After a moment, Magnus, eyes still closed, said, No idea. To practice dark magic in Samael's name, I assume? Any news? Yes, said Alec. He's to the west. How far to the west? Alec frowned, concentrating. Very far. Magnus opened his eyes. Hang on. He got up from the bed with an unexpected alacrity, considering how fatigued he'd looked a moment ago, and went into a desk drawer across the room. He waved a folded paper with excitement. Here we have an excellent opportunity for Warlock Shadow Hunter collaboration. You come here with your rune, and... He unfolded what turned out to be a map of New York City across the surface of the bed and wiggled his fingers around over it. Then he grabbed Alec's wrist and wiggled his fingers under that. Then he leaned over and kissed the back of Alec's hand. Alec smiled. How does it feel to kiss an active rune? There's a little scent of heavenly fire, but otherwise it's nice, Magnus said. Now, what do you have, my noble tracker? Alec concentrated over the map.
Well, he's to the west of this whole map.
Be right back. Magnus left the room. In a few moments, he returned and laid an unfolded map of the whole northeast over the other map.
West of all this,
Alec said apologetically. Magnus came back with a map of the entire United States.
West,
said Alec. He and Magnus exchanged a look. Magnus left again, and this time came back struggling with a gigantic globe of the Earth, easily 2 feet in diameter.
Magnus, said Alec, that's a bar.
He opened the globe at the hinge, revealing 4 crystal decanters inside.
It's still a globe, Magnus said, closing it.
Alec shrugged and began to move his fist slowly over the globe's surface. When it came to rest, Magnus squinted to get a look.
Eastern China, along the coast, looks like Shanghai.
Shanghai? Said Alec. Why would Ragnar and Xin Yun be in Shanghai?
No reason I can think of, Magnus said. Maybe that makes it a good hiding place.
What about Samael?
Magnus shook his head.
The last time Samael walked the earth, Shanghai was a small fishing village. There's no connection between them that I know of.
His dressing gown gaped open as he leaned over the globe, and Alec stared again at the place where Magnus's skin had split open, a grotesque wound, but with no blood, only that eerie light. Magnus caught him looking and primly gathered the collar at his throat.
It's fine.
Alec threw up his hands.
Aren't you concerned at all? He said. You have a stab wound. The stab wound is leaking weird magic. That's serious business. You're like Jace sometimes. It doesn't make you weaker to accept help, you know.
He softened.
I'm just worried about you, Magnus.
Well, I haven't become the thrall of Samael, if that's what you're worried about, said Magnus.
He stretched his arms and legs.
I feel fine. I just need some high-quality sleep. We'll let Katarina confirm that everything's okay, and then tomorrow morning we'll go to Shanghai. Track down Ragnar and Xin Yun and get the book back. Easy.
We will not, said Alec.
Well, someone has to, Magnus said reasonably.
We're not going just the two of us. We need backup.
But
no,
said Alec, and Magnus stopped, though he remained smiling.
What happens if I need runes? What happens if Xin Yun and Ragnar are too powerful with the book for us to take on by ourselves? And hey, are we taking Max with us? Because I don't think we are.
I sort of hoped Katarina could watch him, Magnus said. For the brief time, we'll be gone.
Magnus, said Alec, I know you want to solve every problem yourself. I know you hate looking vulnerable.
I have help, Magnus said. I have you.
I will do everything in my power, said Alec, and there are lots of things we can do as just us.
Some of my favorite things, Magnus put in, waggling his eyebrows.
But this could be serious. If we go with backup. I won't go otherwise.
Magnus opened his mouth to object, but at that moment, mercifully, the doorbell buzzed, announcing Katarina's arrival. Alec opened the door for her, and she strode straight past him without a word. She was wearing blue scrubs, almost the same color as her skin, and her white hair was pulled back in a messy ponytail. As Alec followed her back toward the bedroom, she said,
"How long ago did it happen?"
"Not long," said Alec. 20 minutes, maybe."
"He says he's fine."
"He always says he's fine," said Katarina.
She went into the bedroom and barked,
"Take that hideous silk thing off, Magnus. Let's see this injury."
She paused. Also, why is your bed covered in maps?
It's a perfectly nice robe, said Magnus. And we were planning a post-stabbing vacation.
We were attacked by Xinyan Zheng, the warlock we met in Europe a few years ago, Alec said. We were tracking. Anyway, we found out where she is. Looks like Shanghai.
Katerina nodded. It was clear to Alec this meant nothing to her. He wondered if Magnus was going to mention Ragnar. It was, he thought, definitely up to Magnus whether to share that news. He looked at Magnus, who said only, she did it with something she called a Sveffenthorn.
Never heard of it, Katerina said. But isn't this whole apartment full of books about magic?
Alec said, a little defensively. I didn't want to start looking through books before I knew whether Magnus was okay. I'm great, said Magnus, as Katerina prodded at his temples and then peered closely into one of his eyes. Alec watched nervously as Katerina examined Magnus. After a few minutes, she sighed.
My official diagnosis is that this wound is definitely not good, and I don't know how to make it go away. On the other hand, it doesn't seem to be directly harming you at the moment.
So what you're saying, said Magnus, is that in your professional opinion, there's no reason for us not to go directly to Shanghai to find Xinyun and get this cleared up.
I am not saying that, said Katerina. Alec can do some research in your library and the Institute's library, and I will look at my own sources in the morning and see what I can find. You should definitely not go herring off to Shanghai with a glowing magical hole in your chest.
Magnus put up a bit more of a fuss, but in the end, as Alec had known he would, he deferred to Katerina's wisdom. Once Magnus had promised to take her assessment of the situation seriously, she sighed, ruffled his hair, and headed out. Alec walked Katerina to the door, where she gave him a long look.
Magnus Bane, she said, is like a cat.
Alec raised his eyebrows.
He'll never let you know how much pain he's in. He'll put on a brave face, even to his own detriment.
She put her hand on Alec's shoulder.
I'm glad you're here to take care of him now. I worry about him a little less these days.
If you think I can make Magnus do what I say, Alec said with a smile.
You have been sadly misinformed. He'll listen to me, but he does what he likes.
I guess that's another way he's like a cat. Katerina nodded and said deadpan,
Also, he has cat eyes.
Alec gave her a quick hug.
Good night, Katerina.
Back in the bedroom, Alec found Magnus with his robe back on, digging around under the bed.
What are you doing? Alec cried.
Obviously, said Magnus, eyes gleaming, we are herring off to Shanghai to find Xinyun and Ragnar.
No, we are not, said Alec. You promised Katerina you'd take this injury seriously.
I am, said Magnus. I'm feeling very seriously that getting hold of Xinyun and Ragnar is the best way to start healing up.
Maybe, said Alec, but right now we are getting the 4 hours of sleep we can get before Max wakes up.
Magnus looked mutinous, but then sighed and sat back down on the edge of the bed. Hell. We didn't ask Katerina if she would watch Max while we're gone.
Another reason to wait for morning. We can figure out the plan for Max and gather at least a little information before we go.
Alec waited a moment and then said, carefully,
We could be gone for days, you know.
Magnus hesitated, then nodded in acceptance.
That's true.
Okay. Tomorrow morning we can see who can watch Max for days. He gave Alec an incredulous look that he knew well by now, as it was a look that he gave Magnus, too. It was a look that said,
How is this our life? How is it so strange and difficult and exhausting and wonderful?
How has this not come up before? Alec said. Having to find someone to watch Max.
Well, things have been quiet, said Magnus.
He was right. It had been a relatively peaceful year. Aside from the cold peace, of course, which continued to loom over all of Downworld. They had both barely been called away from New York, and certainly not overnight. They had left Max with others, but only for a few hours. A conclave meeting, a fight breaking out somewhere locally, Downworlder politics gone awry. They had never been away from Max for longer than that. Max had never gone to sleep without them there. Through force of will, Alec stopped his train of thought before it got too far out of the station.
We will make a plan for Max, he said, in 4 hours.
He threw himself onto the bed and reached out to pull Magnus down next to him. The warlock lay on his side, and Alec curled himself around Magnus, feeling a long exhale leave Magnus's body as they nestled comfortably together. The thrum of tension in Alec's stomach slowed and eventually came to a rest. By the time Chairman Meow appeared from under the bed and perched smugly on top of Magnus's hip, Magnus's breathing was even and low. Alec planted a soft kiss on the top of his boyfriend's head and allowed himself, too, to finally sleep. In his dream, Magnus ruled over a ruined world. He sat on a golden throne at the top of a million golden stairs, calling orders in a language he didn't understand to scurrying gray creatures far below him. He was so high that clouds floated by on the stairs below his throne, and beyond the stairs he could see the sun, bloated and red, reflected in flames on the surface of a vast flat ocean. No other people were there. Other than the bedraggled, beaked gray things that lurched below him, he was alone. Slowly he stood up and walked, curious, down a few of the stairs. He thought that if he descended far enough, he would be able to see himself reflected in the ocean below. He kept walking down the stairs, although when he glanced over his shoulder, the throne barely seemed to recede behind him. Eventually he looked down at the surface of the sea and beheld himself. He was gigantic, he realized, 50 feet tall, 100 feet tall. His cat's eyes were huge and luminous. There was no sign of the wound in his chest that the Svefenthorn had made. Instead, the skin of his chest was rough, textured, thick like the hide of an animal. He raised his hands up in front of him, palms out, and noted with some interest the huge, curving claws at the ends of his fingers.
"What is this for?" he yelled. "Why would I be in this place?"
The gray creatures all stopped as one and turned to gaze at him. They spoke to him, but he couldn't understand them. They seemed either to greatly love him or to be greatly frightened of him. He couldn't tell which. He didn't want either. Magnus knew he had slept late when he awoke and saw the angle of the sunlight on the wall. He found the other side of the bed empty and concluded that Alec had decided to let him sleep in before their departure. He found his robe, blinked the sleep from his eyes, and went into the kitchen where Jace Herondale was pouring coffee into Magnus's "I'm kind of a big deal" mug. Magnus was glad he had not wandered out into the kitchen naked.
"Don't you have your own coffee pot?" he said blearily.
Jace, blonde hair in its usual preternaturally excellent state, flashed him a winning smile that Magnus was not prepared to deal with before he, too, had some coffee.
"I hear you got stabbed by a weird Norwegian thorn," Jace said. "Also, do you have any soy milk? Claire's doing a whole soy milk thing now."
"What are you doing in my apartment?" said Magnus.
"Well," said Jace, now rummaging in the fridge, "I'd like to think I'd be welcome any time, what with my close relationship with all three of you, but in this case Alec called us. Said something about Shanghai."
"Who is us?"
Magnus said suspiciously. Jace waved his coffee cup around.
Us, you know, all of us.
All of you? Magnus repeated. He held up a hand. Wait, stop. I am going to go put on something more substantial than a robe. You are going to use your angelic powers to pour me as large a mug of black coffee as you can find, and I will be right back, and then we can talk about terrible concepts like who all of us are and what Alec told you about last night. When he entered the living room, now suitably dressed, he found Alec, arms folded, looking long-suffering. In the far corner of the room next to the ceiling, Max floated, tumbling in the air. He didn't seem to be in peril. Indeed, he was yelling, "Wee!" and appeared to be having an excellent time. Under him, Clary Fairchild and Isabel Lightwood attempted to nudge him back to the ground with a broom handle. With her free hand, Clary was waving a red braid, trying to get Max interested, as though he were Chairman Meow. Max was upside down and obviously feeling good about it. Everyone other than Isabel was in t-shirts and jeans, but she, of course, had shown up in a fitted black sweater over a tiered velvet maxi skirt. She was one of the few people who could occasionally make Magnus feel underdressed. He went over to Alec.
"Anti-gravity spell, I bet," he said.
"He knows it drives us crazy. He's loving Clary and Isabel right now." Alec seemed both annoyed and admiring, a tone of voice Magnus had not realized he would so closely associate with having a child.
"I thought we were herring off to Shanghai," Magnus said quietly.
"We are," said Alec.
"But I told you, if we're going to be fighting evil warlocks, we can't go alone. I called Jace this morning." "And invited the whole gang?"
The door opened, and Simon Lovelace entered. He was wearing a black t-shirt that said, in large white bubble letters, "Good luck with your thing." But he had an unexpected look on his face, distracted, unhappy, and Magnus wondered why. Maybe it was just the weight of the last few years on his shoulders. Even among their group, Simon had been through a lot. He'd been a mundane, been a vampire, been in Shadowhunter prison, become invulnerable, killed the